You're listening to Lincoln's Music.
Sitting by the roadside on a summer's day, chatting with my best mates, passing time away. Lying in the shadows underneath the trees, goodness how delicious, eating goober peas. Peas, 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 eating goober peas. Goodness how delicious, eating goober peas.
Listening to Lincoln's Music. I'm your host, Cinta Sieberlane. And that was the 33rd Illinois Volunteer Regimental Band with Goober Peas, performed on period instruments. We're going to turn our attention a little more to period instruments now, as Chris Falillo explains how he tried to get the sound of the period without actually having or using any period instruments.
And the whole idea was to kind of use these instruments to create a soundscape that was suggestive of the middle 1800s. I don't think any of the instruments I used go back any earlier than, say, 1880, but the idea was to kind of audibly suggest that era. There was an old 1890s parlor guitar I have, and I did what is called high string guitar on that. So you take the high strings from a 12-string guitar set and use those as the sixth string, so everything is an octave higher. And it has this very angelic tone.
While leaving me with images of angels, Chris goes on to explain that period-stringed instruments really used catgut for strings. Catgut apparently is not really the gut of cats, but rather the guts of sheep or goats. Maybe a hog or horse occasionally, but not cats. Apparently this has been done for centuries and most people know about it, but it sure took me by surprise. Meanwhile, Chris got out a yardstick and found that a period guitar from Lincoln's time is about 3/4 the size of a modern acoustic guitar that most people think of today, at least in height. The body of a period guitar is only about half the size of today's acoustic guitars. Add to that the twisted gut strings instead of steel or nylon strings, and it would have been a drastically different sound.
So here is a standard size guitar. The little bitty one that I just described is set up for high string, so it's going to sound radically different because this has just the very thin strings on, which was primarily used as a rhythm instrument on the recording. But it has that real nice overtone to it.
But it's more than just stringed instruments that have changed since the mid-19th century. Brass instruments were once hand-hammered with no standard sound from one piece to the next. Right now we're listening to Captain Todd Cranson leading the 10th Illinois Volunteer Cavalry Regiment Band in the Union March written by Francis Scala, The 24 members are playing period instruments while Captain Cranson is conducting with the very baton originally used by the 2nd Iowa Cavalry Band, the original 2nd Iowa commonly played for Abraham Lincoln himself. If you're just joining us, this is Lincoln's Music, and I'm your host, Cynthia Seberle. That was the march written by Francis Scala for Abraham Lincoln's first inauguration on March 4, 1861. It is best known today as the Union March.
And Scala was the bandmaster of the United States Marine Band in Washington, D.C. And so Scala wrote this march for the first inauguration, and the Marine Band played it. And the handwritten manuscript doesn't have the title Union March on there. It just says Inauguration March for the occasion of Abraham Lincoln's first inauguration and the date. So we have Scala's manuscript, sketches, and score, and we have the handwritten parts that the Marine Band played. And I just took all of that and put it into nice, clean, computerized notation, fixed a few problems, and altered the instrumentation slightly. The Marine Band at that time had woodwinds in it, actually primarily woodwinds, and we're an all brass band, so I just altered it around a little bit to make it work for our band.
When not leading the band, Todd Cranson is also the assistant director of co-curricular music at the University of Illinois at Springfield, where he has helped build the music department. Todd now explains why the 10th Cavalry Band's music may sound a bit strange to modern audiences today. It has to do with the antique instruments and how they were made.
The antique instruments that we use with the 10th Cavalry Band are from the 1860s and 70s, generally. We do have a set of reproductions, but all these old antique instruments were handmade back then, and the valve that makes them able to play was invented in about 1830. So if you think about it, 1860s, they were babies, and it was brand new technology, these instruments, and things weren't standardized and formalized, and also the technology for building them wasn't as established as it is today. And so all the brass and parts were hand hammered and handmade, and because of that, the instruments are not nearly as consistent as we expect today with modern instruments. And also pitch wasn't standardized back then. So what we today, every band and orchestra, they always zones in and tunes at A equals 440. That's a standardized pitch. And our band actually tunes at A equals 445 because that's the pitch we could get the instruments to come together and match best at. Because when they were made, there wasn't a standard. And so we just kind of wrestled them into submission around A445.
Unless you're a trained musician, you probably won't notice those extra 5 beats per second. But coupled with smaller instruments, and essentially you have
the smaller, thinner, higher sound, and that anyone can notice. The actual standardized pitch and us playing at 445, that's maybe less noticeable, but the result of smaller instruments and lower technology design and things like that, it is noticeable, and it's a really interesting, neat sound. Modern bands very roughly, tend to be centered around instruments in B-flat. And our instruments from this time era are very roughly centered around E-flat, which is just higher. The Lincoln Centennial March was written by E.T. Paul for the 100th anniversary of Lincoln's birthday. And I just came across this in an archive online as a published piano music. And I was looking for a grand march for a ball we were doing for Abraham Lincoln's 199th birthday last year in preparation for the bicentennial. And I came across this piece and decided what better way to start our celebration than with, you know, something that was written to celebrate a similar thing 100 years ago. And so I arranged it from the piano score for our Civil War Brass Band. And we performed it last year in February at a ball at the Illinois Governor's Mansion. And everybody was in period attire from the 1860s. And we were in a ballroom that was built and used in the 1860s. And it was just a beautiful event. It was really like stepping back in time. But E.T. Paul's Lincoln Centennial Grand March was a good addition to that, and we'll be playing it again this year for the bicentennial.
Mary Todd also was the first lady to treat the White House as the country's social gathering place. Before that, it had really not been used in the function that we see it now. But she began that tradition.
When Mary Todd Lincoln had her first party in the White House, she asked Francis Scala to do a polka, to write a polka for her. And he obliged and wrote, it's the handwritten title on there in the margin says Mary Polka. I tend to refer to it as the Mary Todd Polka just to make it clear what it is, because there are other pieces out there known as the Mary Polka, M-E-R-R-Y, and things like that. But this one is the M-A-R-Y Polka. And it was written for Mary Todd Lincoln, and it was played by members of the Marine Band for her first party in the White House. And the way I learned about this piece was visiting the Abraham Lincoln Museum here in Springfield. And I read one of those little square, you know, 2x2 white cards on one of the exhibits, and it mentioned the existence of the Mary Todd Polka. And so I was sort of on a bit of a research mission trying to find it. And while doing some other research in the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music Research at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, I was talking to the director of the archives, and his name is Scott Schwartz. And I was talking to him about this, and just so happens he was about to make a trip to Washington, D.C. So while Scott Schwartz was in Washington, D.C., he went to the Marine Band and actually brought home to me the parts and the manuscript things for the Mary Todd Polka. So I was very excited to have that music and arranged it out, and we've been playing it now, and we're looking forward to playing it for the bicentennial.
And so without further ado, here's the Mary Todd Polka, played by the 10th Illinois Volunteer Cavalry Regiment Band. ¶¶ But the Mary Todd polka has a sad footnote. The premiere party that it was written expressly for came at the very moment the Lincoln's son, Willie, fell ill with typhoid fever. Willie Lincoln died 2 weeks later, and his mother went into a grief so consuming that it included banishing Francis Scala from the White House grounds and any performances by the Marine Band. But a year later, the band was back when a compromise was reached with Lincoln. They could play across the street at Lafayette Park. In October of 1862, shortly after the Battle of Antietam, Lincoln visited the battlefield with his good friend from Illinois, Ward Hill Lehman, along with General McClellan. During the trip, Lincoln became depressed and asked Lehman to cheer him up. Lehman sang a popular minstrel called The Picayune Butler, and the humorous ditty indeed brought a smile to Lincoln's face. Nearby reporters saw this and attempted to use it against Lincoln a couple of years later in the 1864 presidential campaign, asserting that he was callously laughing at the Confederate dead. Well, by 1864, Abraham Lincoln was reelected, and the Marine Band was performing their weekly concerts in the South Lawn again. When Francis Carpenter was painting the famous image of Lincoln writing the Emancipation Proclamation, it's said that Lincoln stepped out onto the lawn to listen, but the crowd started cheering for him to speak. He then excused himself, stepped back into the circular parlor, and said disappointedly, "I wish they'd let me sit out there quietly and enjoy the music." Throughout the hour, we've been hearing just some of Lincoln's favorite music. You can find the complete list of music from this program online at wuis.org. Lincoln is perhaps best known for his love of the song Dixie. What many people don't know is that there is also a very strong connection between Lincoln and Hail to the Chief. It was the first song Lincoln heard in Washington, Francis Scala welcomed him with it at the Bullard Hotel in 1861, and it was the last song Lincoln heard in Washington as well, at Ford's Theater on April 14, 1865. When Lincoln heard of Lee's surrender and announced it to the crowds outside the White House, it's said that he called for the Marine Band to play Dixie, a song that had started as a Northern minstrel but became famous as the Rebel Song.
And supposedly they had to look for quite a while to find music because being the Rebel Song, it had been, you know, thrown out.
The word was run from Richmond in that fading April sun. Lee had handed Grant his sword, and the war was finally won. Into the streets the people spilled, feeling the excitement build as the crowd around the White House milled, asking, was it true it's finally done? Inside the White House, Lincoln heard them calling out his name. Sat there wondering what to say to ease their years of pain. Someone yelled, come out the door, tell us what you've got in store for the rebels who have lost the war. So out onto the porch, Abe Lincoln came. He said, we are gathered not in anger, but in celebration. Let's be grateful we are once again a single nation. Let's stand together reassured. Now that peace has been secured, our nation's illness can be cured. And I suggest the overture for this occasion. He said, let the band play Dixie, play that tune that holds its head up high and proud, and let our nation, once divided, bloodied but unbowed, take the swords of war and beat them back into a plow. On the day that Lee surrendered, Mr. Lincoln told the crowd, let the band play Dixie. A tired Union soldier hobbled on his only limb, filled with bitter memories that the war had left with him. Dragged his wooden leg and cane, his face was set and creased with pain. He stumbled, fell, then rose again, wondered what the future held for him. He spied a black child kneeling there in humble gratitude, knelt down right beside her to share her thankful mood. Grateful words were raised in prayer. God, in your sweet loving care, our broken lives now please repair. Let our wounded nation be renewed. And let the band play Dixie, play that tune that holds its head up high and proud. And let our nation, once divided, bloodied but unbowed, take the swords of war and beat them back into a plow. On the day that Lee surrendered, Mr. Lincoln told the crowd, let the band play Dixie.
let the band play Dixie.
This program was produced in the studios of WUIS Public Radio on the campus of the University of Illinois at Springfield and a service of the Center for Public Affairs at UIS. Musical selections, credits, notes, additional stories, and more for this program can be found online at WUIS.org. I'd like to thank Todd Cranson, Randy Eccles, Carl Scroggin, Scott Schwartz,